Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Leadership Leaning. Thank you so much for joining us today. I also want to thank every person that has been commenting, subscribing, reviewing. It helps us so much, whether it be on YouTube or on iTunes. Thank you so much for doing that. We're going to jump right in because we have such a special guest today. But as I said last episode, we're going to answer some questions today. So I'm going to jump into answering a couple questions. This first one is from Jonas. He said, what do you do if you realize that there are things in the leadership of your pastor that you can't ignore? Well, welcome to life and leadership. I think the reality is that I read a book years ago called The Dark Side of Leadership. There is a dark side to every leader. And I think, Jonas, maybe what you're saying is there's some things in your pastor that you have confronted, as you said in your question, and you can't ignore. And I always find when you're not really pleased with your leadership and you don't feel like, you know what, even though I'm not pleased, I'm supposed to be here. If you don't feel like I've got to stay no matter what, one of the most important things you can do is get under healthy leadership. So in other words, what I'm saying is unless God has said you need to stay here, even in spite of your differences or what you're having to work through, maybe it's character issues or a conflict of interest. If there's not a mandate to stay, find a pastor that you respect and that you love and that you can hear the word of God from. I always feel like if I'm going to be under somebody's leadership, I need to hold them in the utmost respect. I need to love their family, love their life, and be able to trust them and follow them. And so if that's a character flaw, you got to really consider, am I in the right church? Am I under the right leader? And sometimes that's a, hey, I've been there before. I felt like one time I was working at church, I was like, God, I really want to get out of here. And I felt like God said, you need to stay until I release you. So until you get that green light, you need to stay planted. If it's not a mandate thing, then you need to consider maybe it's time for you to find a new church. This next one is from Emma. And Emma says, I have a question. How do I transition? Her question is about transition. Well, this is my biggest part of transition. The way you end something determines the way you can start something. So how you end a transition. My dad used to say this to me. He'd say, people will only remember the way that you treat them on the way out the door. So you could take 10 years and it was fun, it was awesome, it was amazing, but what people will remember the most is the end. So maybe you're transitioning and you feel like I'm called to, you know, X business or this other church, whatever it is, just remember, the way you end something, it actually determines the way you can start something. So in other words, finish and transition well so you can start and begin even better. So that's for Emma. All right. I am thrilled today. We're blessed. We are highly favored today. I have with me one of my dear friends all the way from across the pond. England's finest is here today. My dear friend Martin Smith is in the house.
Wow. Thank you.
This is like what we do all the time.
Yeah.
We're pressing record on it.
Yeah. I love you. I love you. And I'm just like, can you believe like the sort of people that have sat in this chair, like famous like actors and actresses and preachers. So it's just little me today.
I'm so excited
and I've watched this like many times. Kids have watched it and now we're here.
What do you think? This is downtown Los Angeles.
I think yeah, you could maybe go a bit more spectacular.
Yeah.
I think you'll get
as far
there.
As backgrounds go.
I think dream a little higher.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Colin and Cast Media that provides this for us. They're one of the most kindest, generous people in the world. It is an honor to sit with you as always. I consider it a huge privilege to call you my friend. And obviously your life has impacted mine for decades, truly. And I can remember being in Bible college as like this 18, 19, 20-year-old, just young guy wanting to, you know God and be used by God, and listening to your albums for hours. And really, I felt like your worship was revolutionary not just for me in that season of my life, but for Christianity, and to see the way that God has used you is just, it's kind of mind-blowing. Do you feel that way?
Wow. I mean, just hearing you talk sounds like someone else, doesn't it? Like you're describing someone else. But yeah, I think just what a life of grace, really, of, you know, God's done something miraculous in our lives. And
yeah,
it was a great team. You know, there were five families involved in Delirious.
Jeez.
And we just went for it. We just decided, you know what? This is a season of our lives. God's calling us.
Yeah.
And we're just going to go for it. And I don't think we had a plan B.
Right.
And I think that was what was special about it. There was never a sort of like a, if it doesn't work out, we're going to do this and do this. It was just all in. And great team. And definitely, that was proof of the sum, you know, the sum of the parts was greater.
Wow.
You know, like no individual on their own could have done that. But
wow.
The team together, it was just so creative and amazing.
We're going to get to the present, but I want to just camp out in the past for a moment if we can.
Sure.
What is your favorite? I've never asked you this. What is your favorite Delirious song? Like, do you have one?
Yeah, I think it would be the song called Obsession. I wrote it while I was in hospital. So that would have been maybe 1994, 95, something like that.
Wow.
And I was in a car crash, you know, and I broke my leg and I was sitting in hospital and that song came out. So it's a pretty mysterious song, but it's a favorite of mine.
That's amazing. Now, have you ever written a song? Have you ever had this moment where you write a song and you go, I think this one's going to, like, I think the world will hear this one. Has that ever happened to you where you go, I think this is...
Wow. Well, you never really fully know.
Right.
And actually, it would freak you out if you were sort of in the process and you were like, oh, yeah, this is... Aren't we amazing?
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, guys, we've done it again.
Wait, we're not supposed to feel that way?
So, always more that I've been surprised.
Right.
Like, oh, wow, people are loving this or they're singing it. And so, but yeah, every now and again, you know you've got something in your hands, which is special. But I think you can count those songs on one hand.
Sure.
You know, over a catalog of 200 songs or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. We just, you know, when we were grabbing coffee, we ran into some guys in LA that, you know, that's what they do. They write songs. And you said, I want everybody to hear what you told them, that as a writer, you only need what? What'd you say?
Yeah, you need one good day a year.
That's so perfect. You only need one good day. The problem is you still have the other 364.
Yeah, you got to sweat for that one day.
Exactly. I want to talk about worship with you. One of my favorite things about you was, you know, like we were on Outcry Tour last summer. And here you are leading worship. I glowingly refer to you as the Christian Bono. I don't know what it is.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty cool. So.
And he really does love the Lord. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But my favorite thing about a great worship leader, and you so embody this, is that you just like control this whole room and it's like you're not even trying. It's like it's very effortless for you. It's never like forced or like demanding you. I don't know if you've ever seen a worship leader like, wow.
Yeah. Come on, people, sing.
It's pretty aggressive, sing. Man.
Yeah.
Like, come on, lift your hands. Yeah. I was like,
if you don't want to be here today, then let's just stop right now.
Well, then, okay.
Yeah.
But you have like this ease about you when you lead worship. It's your life, really. But what, in your opinion... What does a good worship leader do, or who are they? Like, what, when you get up and you see somebody, you go like, that's good. I like that. Of course, this is personal preference, but like when you see a worship leader, you go, that's, I like that.
Yeah, sure. Of course, we're taking the style thing out because, I mean, everyone's going to do it in the way they want to
sure.
do it and the style, and that's great. And in different nations, it's going to be different.
Great.
You go to Africa and it's going to be a whole different... So that's cool. But I think the common thing is you got to believe in what you're singing about. You know, you've actually got to believe the words you're singing.
Yeah.
And have conviction that this is true. Mm. You know, if we're going to sing about how great God is, you've got to have a belief yourself that 100%.
Yeah.
You know, this is true. And I want people to sing that because I know how special that's going to be for them.
Mm.
So I think it's the conviction of, yeah, I believe every word I'm singing.
Mm.
I believe God's alive. And he's going to do, he's going to be here.
Mm.
I think I have complete belief in that. That when I lead worship, that God himself's going to be there in the room or wherever. And just over the years, I've just got, you know, more belief in that. So I can relax, I can chill out. You know, I don't have to stress too much.
Don't have to force anything.
Yeah.
And then when you feel like, because I've watched you take rooms and just kind of elevate them and kind of go like, okay, all right, let's go up a notch. Israel does that. I notice Israel does that too. It's like, do you see in your head like levels or do you, and again, it doesn't feel forced to me, but I think great worship leaders, one of the things I notice about them is they're very within themselves. Mm. But they also have this ability to elevate the faith and the singing and the whole climate. It's just like, I'm just watching the thing lift. How do you do that? What is that?
Wow, I've never been asked that before. I don't even know if I can articulate that. I mean, how does a soccer player articulate how he scores a goal?
Wow.
You know, or how you fall in love. It's a mystery, isn't it? How
wow
these things work. I feel like the room is my friend. I feel like those people, you know, okay, we're friends, and my role here tonight is simply to help you connect with what's going on here, with what God's doing in your life, the words on the screen, and I'm constantly throwing it back to them. I'm throwing, you know, so this is your responsibility to rise up.
There it is.
Yeah.
I liked what you just said, because I that's exactly what I sense. I think some people are like, it's on me and my gift to lift the room.
Yeah.
And what you just said is what I watch. I you're articulating what I sense. And that is that whole thing of the ownership. You're letting the people and your friendship with the crowd rise together.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think you said it better than I did.
No, stop. But I feel like what you're saying too, I've never thought about this, is that there's trust there.
Yeah.
You're giving the people trust. I trust you rather than me to help really lift this thing.
Yeah, and I think as well is that there's a difference between the sort of power of God and then being super spiritual.
Yeah.
So I try and stay away from the latter thing, which is, oh, you know, this is going to be a holy moment tonight and we'll just enter in and da-da-da. And, you know, let's talk to people like we just talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know, let's not put on an extra sort of weird voice or a performance thing. You know, you can talk to your people like you do your kids.
Yeah.
Or your friends. So I think that's important, is that just be who you are.
Yeah.
And people, it's amazing how people see through you, right? It's amazing how a crowd can look at someone on the stage and there's a a collective opinion of who you are in a very, very short space of time.
That's it.
And it's like they know.
They just know.
And I don't know how that works, but I think it's something about how transparent you want to be.
Yep.
How open you want to be. The fact that you are admitting to not being the finished article.
Mm.
You know, that we've got flaws.
Mm.
I think all those sorts of things allow the room to relax.
Yep.
And go, phew, okay, he's one of us.
Yep.
She's one of us. Or
that's great.
And then when you've sort of created that agreement with one another, then the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
You can then take people and like, great, let's go for this.
I love that. Oh, okay, so again, I want to talk about past and then present. Maybe we'll vacillate in between both. By the way, vacillate's a fantastic word. Not used frequently enough.
But we should vacillate more.
Yeah, we're going to vacillate in between. So I want to talk about, because I feel like I've been around your kids a lot, and you're around, you know, your kids are fantastic. I love them. Shout out to all your kids, all six of them. My God. You know, they love music.
Yeah.
You love music. You listen to music. And so here you have, again, I want to talk about past, Delirious in a Can. Did You Feel the Mountains Tremble? Like, these were like, you know, like it touched the earth.
Yeah.
Okay. So then with worship, do you find, how do we progress in that genre? Because worship is a genre. So some of it is a bit like, this is what works.
Yeah.
It's what we've always done.
Yeah.
And yet I get around you and I feel like you have this creative thing in you and, you know, your family that's like, I want something new. So how do you combine the ageless principles of worship? Did You Feel the Mountains Tremble? Like what works as a congregation, what works as a chorus, and yet new sound?
Yeah, and I'm always amazed at how much, if you call it a congregation or a crowd, how far they're willing to go. So when I hear some of the new Hillsong stuff, for example, some amazingly complex melodies and different parts, and you know, maybe 20 years ago I thought, oh, you could never do that in church, but isn't it amazing that another generation comes through and they don't know that they can't do that, so they're just, yeah, great, this is amazing,
let's try it,
this is worship music for me. So I think each generation brings different set of parameters and just keeps going further and further. I just love the idea that there are no rules. That there's, I'm not sure that God is telling us that there are any rules within our genre.
Yeah.
I think he's just saying, make an amazing noise.
Wow.
Unto me.
Yep.
You know, make a sound that shakes the earth. You know, make a, you know, lift up your praise, which shakes the heavens, you know.
Wow.
Now, isn't it amazing in the scriptures that there's no mention of style or, you know, oh, you got to have like a drum kit and a guitar player. And and that's there's a reason for that, right?
Mm.
Because those things are going to change with every 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with a lady on a church organ and that was the thing. And then suddenly there's a drum kit in every church and it's like, whoa, 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 you know, you can't have drums in. And now that's just normal.
Right.
So you're always knowing that something new is going to come.
Yep.
It's going to upset someone.
Yep.
But the teenage kids always bring it, whether you want it or not, because they end up becoming church and leading church. And
right.
So I love that so much.
I love that. When you say that, it reminds me of that old saying, the young always win. But I feel like that's a big value of yours. Like, if I were to talk about, you know, some I think the reason why some leaders get weird is they have this run and they're still married to it and it's still their identity.
Yes.
But when I'm around you, I feel like that was like your old life that you have to, like, out of obligation, acknowledge.
Yeah.
But you're so in the now and the new. How did you do that? Like, how did you, I don't know if it's a divorce or a death to that, but it's like, I have to bring that up around you and you're like, okay, we got to talk about it. Yep. It's like, you know, I have to acknowledge it.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for the past and what God's did. And in a sense, it gave me the springboard to sort of keep going and doing new things. But I suppose I've just, deep in my soul, I've got this pursuit of, you know, just appreciating music, the art form of, and it's just so amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then you just get all these new songs coming and you're just like, wow, this is fantastic. I didn't realize we could do that in church, but it's happening. And
yep,
you know, it's just like amazing, well done. So I think as well, having teenage kids are bringing music into the house that I wouldn't normally listen to, and you're just going, wow, that's fantastic. And understanding the frequency that they're on, and so that's helped me a lot. Is like, oh, really? I didn't think that would work, but
yeah,
you're loving that, and you're getting close to God through that. But I do feel quite childlike still.
Mm.
you know, I still feel like, let's keep going, keep pressing in. I don't believe that God has a style of music that he really likes. But I think in the white Western church, somehow we started to believe that maybe he does.
Mm.
You know, actually God sort of likes Coldplay style worship, you know? That's his favorite record.
I'm glad you said it. I didn't.
You know what right. I'm saying? You know, God really loves that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you travel around different nations and see the expressions, isn't it amazing that the same Holy Spirit turns up everywhere?
Yep.
Regardless of what we do, the resources, whether you've right. got LED screen or lights or
doesn't matter.
Just someone on a piano or a violin or presence of God always comes if there's people wanting just to worship Jesus.
Yep.
I love that.
It's amazing. Do you ever hear a song where you're like, we need a song? Like, do your kids ever bring something home and you're like, the church needs something that sounds like that? Or like, I find myself like, I'll be in like a boxing class or something. And I'm like, stop, hold on. I got to grab my phone and I record this because I'm like, we need a song in church that sounds like that.
Yeah. There's this amazing genre that's sort of grown out of the east of London. It's called grime music. It's sort of like a rap thing. It's sort of, you've got Chance and you've got Kendrick Lamar, but it's not as polished as that. Okay, it's slightly grungier and like, you know, a bit more lo-fi. But there's a couple of those guys you think, yeah, the amount of spoken word content.
Wow.
In that genre, it's like a whole sermon.
Yeah, right.
So like that, yeah, I think, well, that's perfect for like Sunday. You don't even need a pulpit.
Just do that.
You just let the creative guys bring the message through.
Yeah.
You just get a beat going and like start preaching off the back of it. And so I think, it's not necessarily, that song, but I just think some of the genres, I can't wait to sort of see that creep through into mainstream church.
Sure, sure.
But at the end of the day, it's just letting kids bring what they're supposed to bring. Like I was allowed to, you know?
Yeah.
I was allowed to lead worship with an electric guitar.
Yeah.
And
which at the time had to have been like, what are they doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This isn't even like possible.
Yeah.
So every generation brings their stuff.
Yeah.
And great leaders allow that.
That's awesome. I appreciate, and I feel like you have this continual theme around you, which I would just use the word creativity. You're such a creative and you value that. Talk to me about, in the church, do you feel like there's a real green light for creatives? Do you feel like, are we doing a good enough job to like really release people into being creative and wild and having that expression?
Yeah, I think that's where you see the greatest churches are the ones that will value the creativity the most. Of course, you need your theology and you need great preaching. You need all those things, you know, kids work. But where you see that high value on like releasing creatives to go way beyond what they think they can do. It is where you see the magic a little bit. So I think that's, you can see that emerging with a new generation of leaders.
It's great.
Some of whom may have been in the creative industry before.
Mm.
But what I'm saying is that it's a time to sort of reinvent the whole thing.
Yep.
And go, not necessarily, if you're a church leader thinking, how can I make creative people fit into my church?
Wow.
It's more the other way of like, what do the creative people want to make this church look like?
Jeez.
You know, give it to them.
Wow.
And you can pastor it and, you know, love people, make sure. But what do you want it to become?
Yeah.
And I think once you relinquish control, I think that's where we're going to see a new model of church, which is going to really connect into our communities and cities.
Yeah.
Because at the heart of every city is like a creative energy, right?
Totally.
and people will always connect with that. They might not necessarily agree with your theology or be happy to even come on a Sunday morning, but they will connect to the creative force of what you're doing as a community.
But you use the word. I think you nailed it on the head right there, and that is the word control.
Yeah.
And so I would, you know, I have a church now, so all my theories about creativity are out the door, because it's like now I'm like I'm you know, yeah, I'm responsible for the creative community within our church.
Yeah.
How much control am I willing to give? You know, how much is it going to be like, okay, you guys can play, it's like with my kids, you guys can play outside in the backyard, but not out front.
Yeah.
Giving control over is hard. So how do we do that? One, how do you give it over to the creatives and in a successful way? What does that look like in your opinion?
Well, I think that's where it's so important to create a culture of not sort of like a top-heavy leadership structure.
Right.
You know, where you're the guy at the top and this is how it goes. But actually more that sort of family dynamic.
Great.
And the role of the mum and dad,
yeah,
is completely underrated, right?
Right.
So we're all being encouraged to be these sort of superhero leaders, strategic, and that is really important. But actually, the love and care of people in your church, pushing them to do great things, pulling them up when they're slightly, you know, well, I wouldn't do that.
Right.
I think it is that mom and dad, mother and father thing, which this generation really respond to more than the sort of authoritarian,
right?
You know, this is how we're doing it.
Yeah.
That they want to feel part of a family, and then you'll get all of them.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything better when I feel like, you know, personally speaking, when our creatives are, you know, feeling that green light to create. And
yeah,
I'd rather, it reminds me of like having to motivate people. If I feel like I have to motivate people, I realize that I'm losing. But if I have people come and go, like, we had this idea and what about this, you know, and this song and this, I'd rather have that and trying to cultivate that in the community.
Yeah.
I find for us, you know, like all the stuff that I love, I want to have a whole bunch of people in our church that like love to create. Like the merch thing for me is like, this is so fun, and I got to get out of the way so they can create merch. The music thing is like so fun, I got to get out of the way so they like breathe and like create all this fun music. There's a tension there, like all of leadership, where it's like, I can't just go like, you guys go play. It's like there is some participation and some involvement. And I always feel like my role is to bring the color of conviction around it, like content of theology.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not my job to write songs, but it's my job to go like, hey, this is what I think God wants to say to our house. This is why I feel like God is speaking to me. This is like, here's some scriptures I'm standing on right now for our city.
Yeah.
And within that conviction, it allows them to go create color.
Yes. And it's out of trust, isn't it, and friendship.
Yeah, there you go.
You have this flow.
Yeah.
Between, and the worst thing you can do with a creative person is tell them that the only thing that matters is what they bring to a Sunday morning. You know?
Right.
You know, and I'm saying that from experience, that
right,
when you have that feeling that the only thing kind of that people love you for is like, great, you keep bringing what you bring to a Sunday, then we're all good. Wow. But of course, we're all more colorful than that and complex and beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the future as well, is setting the Levites free, setting that creative community to empower them to go into the marketplace, into the world with their gift.
Yeah.
And set their community on fire.
Yeah.
And then this is what I believe, is that in the end, it makes the church more colorful as well.
Yep, I totally agree.
So it's a risk, isn't it? All these things are a risk. But all you know is that when you're in an environment where everybody's flying, like you say, there's this upward motion of content and come on, we can do it. It smells great, doesn't it? Like, it smells good from the inside. It feels healthy. people outside the church looking and going, wow, I might not believe in what they believe in, but it sounds and smells great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? All these kids just like going for it. I'd like my kids to do that.
Right, right.
And then we also know the opposite, which is the control and the shutting down and the boxing and the fence, and it smells really bad.
And you, and no one has to tell you.
No.
You just get around.
Just
and
go, ooh.
Hey, so, and then you, if you ask, you go, hey, so tell me about, and then just it comes out. I want to talk about, you already used the word community and kind of hinted at it, but two things that I love about you is that number one, you go low, like you're humble. So here you are, you know, and I don't want to use these terms because they drive me crazy, but they, some would call, you know, like a Christian celebrity or, yeah, you know, at one point in your life, like you, people could label you as a rock star.
Yeah.
And you've lived that life and yet like you go low and you're humble and you're very authentic and genuine. So I want to talk about that and how important that is to have an authentic soul. Because again, people, I agree, people walk in and 30 seconds in, they go, I'm in. Nah, I'm good.
Sure.
So going low. And then the other thing I love about you, and I want you to talk about this, is that you throw your life into your community and you let your life explode there rather than platform stuff. How did you figure that out? Those two things.
Wow. Well, I mean, I married a great woman.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah, you did.
She's amazing.
Right.
Anna is just a unique person who she loves life. She has this incredibly simple, authentic relationship with God. She's everybody's friend. I don't know anybody that doesn't like Anna. You know, be like Julia. So I've got that gift in my life that she sort of is the fireworks in our family. You know,
great.
She's the matriarch, the boss.
Yeah.
But also, if there's any energy and excitement, she would have a party every night.
Yeah.
At our house.
I love that.
And so that's the sort of person she is. She loves the house being full of people. The more, the merrier. She's mum to loads of people. So I have that in my life, which demonstrates to me that, well, I can see that God really likes that.
Yeah.
I could see, and I wish I was more like that myself. So that's been amazing to me. And seeing as well, how, you know, we complicate things so much, don't we? You know, we explore the all the avenues of theology and this book and that book and this, and at the end of the day, you know, like I've just seen in our community and in her life, you just sort of love people and it always works out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Stay sweet with everybody.
If we believe that we carry the presence of Jesus, if we, you know, Christ in us, if we believe that that is the heart of the gospel, and then we don't have to try too hard, actually. We can just, like you say, sort of live a humble life and try and love people, serve people.
It's amazing.
Be generous, and somehow it brings a lot of peace, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so yeah, I don't know whether I've answered that well,
no,
but it's just,
I think that you have, because it's just, it's who you are, it's how you live. I'm just amazed at how many people with status, so to speak, or a following, you know, fill in the blank, that it feels like sometimes that the more that you become successful, the harder it is for people to go low and to be authentic and to really be in the moment and genuine.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and there's a bit in me that could be like that,
yeah,
and can be like that at times.
Sure.
We've all got an ego. We've all,
yeah,
we all want to be someone.
Right.
We all want to achieve and
be ambition. Respected.
Yeah. So we all love those things. That's the flesh, right?
Right.
But again, the grace for me, the grace of God for me is, you know, marrying this amazing lady. And now my children have that same DNA.
Yep.
And they just wouldn't have that in our family.
Right.
You know, like I've got teenagers just like, Dad, what on earth are you doing?
Right.
You know, just get off your tree. You know, get out, you're just like...
Wait, get off your tree. We don't use that. We don't use that expression over here. What is get off your tree?
I don't know. I think I made it up. Get out your tree.
Get out your tree, Dad. Yeah. I'm going to start saying that to people.
Just come down. Come down.
Like you're like a little Zacchaeus.
Yeah.
Get off your tree, Dad.
Come down. Chill out.
Get off the tree.
Who do you think you are anyway?
Who do you think you are, Zacchaeus? And then you look down. Are you calling me Zacchaeus?
Yeah.
I love that. But I don't think anybody has ever put the packaging of words together like that. Throw your life into your community and let it explode, because that to me says I don't have to be creative just on Sunday, but my life and the way that I live within my community and exploding it out there is far more important than what I could do on one day of the week.
Yeah.
Like I believe that. I've tried to live my whole life with that kind of spirit and attitude of going like, I can actually be more effective 6 days of the week with my lifestyle and who I am in a city than what I could do from a platform.
Yeah, and I think that's a really big thing for leaders, church leaders, to learn is not this sort of, I want all of you to just bring your energy to me, you know, so that our thing can be great.
Right.
But actually, I think the bigger thing, the bigger kingdom sort of life brilliance is, no, I want your life to explode.
Yeah.
Who you are, it's what beautiful. You do. And then that's just going to like, I'm just going to get all of that anyway.
Yeah.
And just the vibrance of that is going to spill into what I'm doing and leading a church. And
do you feel like your worship leading gets better because your living gets better?
Yeah, I feel like I'm less intense now, older, in the right way. That I'm happy to fail as well. I'm happy to sort of risk things knowing that it might not work out.
Yeah.
Because there's always tomorrow, right?
Yeah, right. One of my favorite memories with you was when we were in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And we were in Baton Rouge and I'm getting ready to go out and preach. I think I was following Bethel.
Yeah.
It goes Bethel, then me, then Lauren, I think. I'm getting ready to walk out and you come up to me and you go, hey, there's a guy in the back there in a wheelchair. And I felt like God said, let's pray that God will heal him and he'll walk. And I was like, I looked at you and I was like, thank God I really know you and really trust you. Because if you were anybody else, I'd be like, oh, that you're a sweetheart, which is code for like,
no,
I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
That is... like I'm going up to preach. I've got X amount of minutes.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I trust you. I know you. And you get up. My favorite thing you said that night, we're going to pray for so-and-so. And you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing right now. It was like so sincere. And I'm like, in my head, part of me is like, you don't know what you're doing right now. But like, wow, that's so awesome. This is not coerced. This is not like manipulative. This is not like rhetoric. This is like genuinely, authentically who you are. And in this moment, you're not afraid. There is no failure in this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you look at the gospel, you know, in its simplest forms, it's about three things: healing, salvation, and deliverance. You know, I don't know what order, but
right.
But in essence, you know, so we've got to have those three things sort of in the fabric of what we do, whatever style it is. You know, we want people to come from darkness to light. We want salvation. You know, he's the God of salvation. You want people to get healed, whether that's physically, emotionally. And I think that's okay to believe in that, because that's in the scriptures, right?
Right.
You know, Jesus spent most of his time walking around touching people and healing people, the blind man. So that's okay. I can agree with that.
Yep.
And so, and then it says, well, you know, my people are going to be greater than things than I've done.
Right.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, then I might have faith for a guy in a wheelchair to get out of that. So
yeah,
I don't know whether it will happen, but God's on my side.
Yep.
And then the deliverance of people, the deliverance of a nation, you know, turning back to God. So... yes, you're right. In that moment, I would have been as scared as anybody in the room.
Sure.
Thinking, oh, no, this is going to go bad. You know, I can feel this is going to go really bad. There's only 6,000 people here, you know.
Right.
But obedience is the key, isn't it?
That's it.
And, like, if we're not constantly walking the plank, so to speak,
wow,
putting ourselves in a bit of risk and yep. danger, then we just do what we do and just do it the same the following night.
Yeah.
And so I think the gospel's, I believe the gospel's alive, and so then we should be too.
I know that I've mentioned this to you before, but I want everyone to know how you do live this out. So here we are, we're out on tour, and our families, it didn't matter what city we're in, we're going to go find a pool
yeah.
at the Radisson Inn or the local Marriott
yeah.
and play in the pool all day. And then, you know, make it to the arena by our, you know, you had sound check.
Yeah.
Preachers don't have sound checks, thank God. And then, you know, we do a prayer meeting every night. And I know I've told you this, but I was so impressed and motivated by your diligence of preparation that it's like you would leave the pool early, go get ready, come out looking like, you know, just sharp, focused.
Yeah.
And go do your sound check and then come into the prayer meeting just like, I would use the word professional. Mm. You're so professional. I've been around tours where you could tell the person is there physically, but they're not here.
Sure.
And they're kind of just mailing in the night.
Yeah.
How did you get that? How did you get that professional? Because again, we're talking about, you've been doing this since the 90s.
Yeah.
And here we are a few decades later, and I can't imagine you giving more effort and more intentionality. How did you get that work ethic and that professional attitude?
Well, I've never really been asked that before, but I just feel grateful to be, one, to be alive.
Mm.
You know, I go right back to the beginning, 6 months into being alive, I had this thing called bronchial pneumonia, which I nearly died from.
Mm.
And then again at 24, I had a car crash, which could have wiped me out. So I sort of do live with a sense of,
right,
you know, I'm grateful to be here. And with that comes a great gratefulness to, wow, I get to do this.
Yeah.
Also, I've had times in my life where, you know, you've had an arena full of many thousands of people, or a field in India with 400,000 people. And then you have moments where you're pushing creatively into something and you might have 12 people show up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think those things have been good for me because it's taught me to really be grateful for whatever and make it all count and, you know, and also honor the people that you're with.
Yep.
You know, people are putting on these great events and you want to honor what they're doing and not just sort of, it's just another thing.
Mm.
So of course, you know, like anyone, I get tired, or maybe not every day completely up for it. But in general, I think, yeah, I would say this is the best job in the world. I mean, you would say what you do.
Totally.
But I believe that. And so when I hear people complain about it, that really makes me angry.
Right, right. Right. It's like, do you understand what the privilege that's,
yeah,
the opportunity that's in front of us?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I think it is a discipline. You know, you talk about creatives and discipline is not the first word that comes to mind usually. But for you to have the creative value and the creative, you know, calling really to, you know, as a musician, as a songwriter, but to have that discipline of diligence, I was really moved by that and challenged. You know, you go on a tour for 17 cities and you're like, Albuquerque, we're just gonna yeah, call that one in. Shout out to Albuquerque, by the way.
Yeah.
That was a great stop. Remember, yeah, Albuquerque, New Mexico?
Oh my goodness.
Shout out to Chris Martinez and that family.
Yeah.
We played in the pool all day.
Oh, what a life.
That was not a bad day. I should not use Albuquerque as my reference.
No.
Let's use Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
Better reference. But the fact that you're not mailing it in, you're like intentional and deliberate. To get to the level of success that you've experienced, it can't just be based upon creativity. There's some diligence and there's some work ethic and professional attitude.
Yeah. I remember being with Carl Lentz once, and he was, because when it's yourself, you don't really know what you're doing, do you? You can't articulate it either, because it's just what you do.
Sure.
But yes, I think that you can be spontaneous in what you're doing, but only if you're organized. So otherwise it can be a bit indulgent. Hey, we're just like doing, you know, we're going with the flow. But I would think about each night what we're going to do, and I would try and sort of connect with that moment, think, okay, well, God, what do you want to do tonight? And then sometimes you get a little idea ahead of time. And sometimes when you're actually on the stage, that will drop back in. And you go, oh, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
So I think that the spontaneity, the ability to sort of go left and right and quickly, you're right, is because I've thought about it. It doesn't mean that I've thought about every single thing that's going to happen.
Sure.
But in my mind, I'm organized as to we're prepared for anything.
I don't think there's a worse feeling for me personally than getting in front of a crowd and feeling like the guilty conscience that I'm not prepared for you. Like, I haven't thought about you. Yeah. That is a very bad feeling.
Yeah.
I've had moments where I felt that and been like, this is irresponsible.
Yeah, and they know it though, don't they?
Oh, man.
And then it just goes from bad to worse.
Yeah, you can't hide it. You really can't hide it.
Yeah.
You're like, let's just call it out, guys. I'm not ready for you. I can do all my tricks, but none of them are going to work because I'm actually not in that place. Hey, I want to talk more about your soul and kind of soul keep, because I feel like you do that so well. We're going to take a minute and do top five, and then we'll come right back with Martin Smith here on Leadership Lean In. Leaders I gravitate towards, write down number one, is genuine. Oh, I love genuine, authentic, real, sincere. There is nothing worse than being around someone that has the right words with the wrong heart. Saying all the right things, all the right words, but there's something here you're like, I don't know, something's off. But there's nothing better than being around somebody and you go, I can tell this person is so authentic, they're genuine, they're real. Remember, when people are thin slicing or making judgment calls, they make them like that. It's very fast. And you can kind of just tell, oh, this person is very sincere. This is just kind of who they are. Or, I don't know, this feels like a show. This feels like it's fabricated. There's dual tendencies here. I always find myself falling helplessly in love with people that are genuine. Make sure, as a leader, that you're not the person that's like trying to flex or put it on or try and act like you're something you're not. Just people like you. I love what Craig Rochelle says. He says, remember, at the end of the day, be yourself. There's nothing worse than somebody's trying to be something they're not. Be genuine. Number two, positive people. These are my favorite people in the whole world. They have, I call it a PMA, a positive mental attitude. They're positive even when things aren't going well, even when things aren't so bright and sunny. They just have this positive outlook on life. They see glass full, not glass half empty. The law of opposite of positive, it is a negative. I can't work with negative people. They have a negative attitude, a negative mindset. Everything's negative, critical, cynicism, things aren't good, blah, blah, so-and-so. They're always kind of like pointing and nitpicking at others. I like positive people. Remember, your attitude is your altitude. You will never surpass your attitude. Positive people, find them, recruit them. I just need somebody to go like, hey, you know what? Today wasn't that good, but next Sunday's coming or tomorrow's coming. I always want to be around positive people. And guess what? I really, as a person, I want to be known as being a positive person everywhere I go. I'm not negative Nancy. Positive Paul. Like, just saying that. I love that. Okay, number three. They think for themselves. This is so crucial. They think for themselves. In other words, I always gravitate towards leaders that have their own ideas. I don't really need people around me that can just spit back my ideas. I want people around me that have their own ideas. You know, they think for themselves. It's going to do you no good to surround yourself with people that are just yes people, that agree with and can regurgitate your great idea. I want people around me that they can think for themselves. I have this idea. I have this thought. I was watching this video and it made me think, you know, we could do X, Y, or Z. Get around people that think for themselves. I love being around other creatives. I love being around other creative thinkers and people that have ideas. And in other words, I don't want to be around people that just gobble up what you've already said. Get around some people that think for themselves. They have an original thought, an original idea, and they found something that's going to bring and add value to what you're building. Number four, you are who I want to become. I gravitate towards people that they already are who I want to become. So I find myself trying to get coffee, lunch, dinner. I find myself flying to get around people that it's like, you are who I want to become. Notice that I not say you are where I want to get. I want to accomplish what you have, because I don't even really think for the people I want to be like, I don't know if I'm going to accomplish what they've accomplished. But I know that I can become a little bit more like what they've already become. So I want to get around generous people. And I want to get around big thinkers. And I want to get around positive people. And I want to get around people that it's just like their marriage is good and their soul is good. And I'm trying to steal their disciplines and steal their habits and find out their cheat codes on life, because I want to get around people who already are the person I want to become. Here's the fifth and final one, is number five, they're secure. People we gravitate towards. I find myself staying away like the plague. I stay away from insecure people because insecure people can't help themselves. They sabotage relationships. They talk negatively behind other people's back. They love to gossip and they can't help but toot their own horn. I find myself always trying to get around secure, confident people because, well, then I have a shot at a healthy relationship. Remember, healthy relationships are just made up of healthy individuals. So I find myself, I'm gravitating towards not the person that's told me who they've been with, what they've done, how great their life is. I like quiet confidence. I like secure individuals. I like being around people that are comfortable in their own skin. Insecurity always tells on itself, and security never lets their cards be shown. They're just secure. They're confident. I gravitate towards those kind of people. Remember, as leaders, identify who you gravitate towards, because then that can help you become who you want to become. Top five. We love you. All right. Welcome back. Leadership Lean In. I'm joined today by my dear friend. This is so fun, by the way.
Oh, amazing.
This is like just what we do. We just don't always wear humongous headphones.
And the Starbucks.
And the product placement.
Yeah.
So someone's like, does Starbucks pay you to do that? No, man, stop getting on me about this stuff. I forget who it was. Someone's like, I don't want to use the headphones. They don't look good. And I'm like, I kind of like the headphones because I don't ever get to hear myself like this.
I know, isn't it? It's like a beautiful feeling. And I can hear your voice.
Yeah, right?
So close to me.
Same.
Like, well, I've got Chad Veach right
this
there.
This is not a bad combo.
Right, Chad Veach.
Okay, I want to talk about soul keep.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's the right phrase, but 3 decades in, from what I know of you, you know, and what my impression is that, like, you're really, like, intentional about trying to have a healthy house, healthy marriage, healthy life. That's I hear that from you, which is usually a telltale sign that's on someone's radar.
Yeah.
What are things that you do that's like, I have this implemented in my life to make sure I don't, you know, go sideways or get unhealthy?
Wow. And really, you know, like life, relationships, marriage, kids, it's an everyday thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, what, as soon as you think, oh, wow, I've got this, we got this sewn up, you know, like we know how to do this. I'm good with all the kids. We've had a date night. Great, we're okay. The following morning, you can wake up and all hell breaks loose about something else, you know.
That is life, right there.
I've forgotten to do something.
Yeah,
And then suddenly you're like, okay, we got to.
The people that have no kids or only like one, by the way, anybody that has one kid has an accessory.
Yeah.
But you have six kids. So you're saying this from a real experience.
Oh, and we're the minivan guys, aren't we?
Yeah, we got minivans, man. They don't know our struggle.
I know, but we put black wheels on it. And it's like...
balling.
Which, you call it murdered out, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, murdered them out. Black on black on black.
You know, no one in the UK knew what that meant.
Until you did it.
I tell everyone, yeah, our van's murdered out. It's murdered out, baby. And they're like, what are you
even
talking?
Hearing you say that is a real blessing. That is today's treat, is you saying murdered out.
Yeah. Yes, it's murdered out. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Just taking care of yourself.
Yeah. So I think it's an everyday commitment to wanting the people in your life to be great and try and, you know, value them. Of course, easier said than done. But, you know, one of the big things for me would be honesty and not having any secrets.
Mm.
I think that's a huge thing for people. You know, just try and not have any secrets between you. You know, nothing sort of shadows around your life that people can go, oh, what is going on there? What did he mean? Or, you know, just keep it simple. So, you know, we've had a great relationship over the years, Anna and I, where it's been quite fiery at times.
Sure.
But because we're fighting for that very thing of, look, I don't want it to be anything in the middle here.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a good thing to fight over.
Yeah, that's right.
That's like a proper, come on, we're gonna sort this out. I think no shadows, no secrets is good for your soul. And community, we talked to that before. It's just sort of like, you know, the more open you live, the more friends you've got in your life, that it's harder then.
Yep.
It's harder to make mistakes when you've got more people in your life that are speaking into it. I think if you isolate yourself and pretend that you're sort of better than you are or more important than you really are, it's in that space that you can easily make poor decisions.
That's it.
And we've all done that, of course. But I think just the ability to talk about decisions and be open with people and try and not have so much of an ego.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite simple.
It's the simplest, hardest thing. It's like,
but so difficult.
I was talking to somebody recently that's like, you know, I would think is really, in my opinion, very successful. And he said, he goes, you know what I want to talk about? I want to do something called It's Hard to Be Humble.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, anybody that just says it that way and it can admit how hard it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's simple. It's really hard.
Yeah. I heard Chris Martin talk about this from Coldplay about, you know, the problem is you get in this strange space where if he doesn't have people helping him before a show, he's not going to be able to do the show.
That's it.
So someone might be bringing him a coffee or, you know, or helping him. And it's like, just to a lot of people, that would look like, wow, you just, you know, what an idiot.
Right.
There's all these people running around, you know. But it's okay to have those things in there if they're functioning, they're helping you function.
Sure.
But it's the entitlement that's wrong. It's like, I deserve those things.
That's it.
It's like, no, you don't deserve any of those things. But we're helping you function in what you got to do.
That's it.
That's fine.
Yep.
But don't assume that that's because you're above everybody.
Right, right.
So it's so hard to keep that perspective. I think the more successful people get, their world narrows down,
yep,
becomes fewer people,
mm-hmm,
generally more yes people.
Yeah, because they're paid.
Yeah. And so I think that becomes really tough for people. And then the message they're hearing the whole time is they're just amazing.
Yep.
And so after a while, you do maybe start to believe that you are.
I think that is the brilliance of leaning into your marriage. Not that my wife doesn't tell me that I'm amazing.
Yeah.
You know, she is very good at, you know, encouraging when it's appropriate, but also like it's just such a different relationship. Like your spouse, I think, sees the good, bad, and the ugly, and my experience with in every marriage is just really honest.
Yeah.
Like you failed me. You didn't help me here. You didn't, whatever. I need that makes you so normal.
Yeah. And that's the gift to us, isn't it?
It is. It is a gift.
Yeah. It's you know, I'm so grateful for Anna and the kids because they bring me that.
Yeah.
In bucket loads.
Yeah. Get out the tree, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you doing up in the tree, Dad?
Yeah.
Gotta humble you real fast. I'm sorry. I got it back in the tree again. Hey, talk to me about, this is so cool, Iron Lung. Who did this artwork, by the way?
A great photographer in London did the shot.
And the edit as well?
Yeah, I think so.
That's really cool.
And then I've got a team, a guy called Matt Ellis helped, and Giles Lambert. Cool. Yeah. But the title Iron Lung is an iron lung is, if you go back 100 years and you go into a hospital and you've got breathing problems and they put you in this big iron device and it'll help your lungs breathe for you.
Mm.
So they don't use that anymore because it's just like out of date.
Yeah.
But when I was 6 months old, they put me in an oxygen tent.
Wow.
Like an iron lung. And that helped me breathe.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't able to breathe on my own. So I used that story. The first song is all about the story of me lying there as a kid. But my parents, amazingly, tell the story that they were standing by this oxygen tent and they prayed, God, if you would let our son make a noise again, then we'll give him back to you. So that sort of freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the sense that I wasn't making a noise. I had no breath in my body, really.
Jeez.
God, if you help him sort of... And I suppose I went on and, you know, made a bit of a noise.
Wow.
So it's a beautiful story. That's the opening song.
And I love it.
And then I called the whole record Iron Lung because it represented my first breath.
Mm.
And then during the recording, unfortunately, Anna's mum passed away.
Mm.
And so that represented sort of the last breath of her life. And there's a song on the record called Give Thanks for a Broken Heart. Mm. And it's all about that story. So there was a lot going on during the recording.
Beautiful. Well, I can't wait to listen to it. And it's out on everything.
Yeah.
iTunes, Spotify.
Yeah.
For number one, the fact that this is like one of the most iconic covers. Like that is very, like you need to have a poster of this somewhere in your house so the kids can just walk by and say, get out of the poster, Dad.
Yeah, I should have it by my bedside. So when I wake up in the morning,
that's amazing.
What a guy.
But you could say, but you know, for your mom, she's a part of this. Yeah. So you justify it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, congratulations. I can't wait to listen to it. And I want to end with this. This is one of my favorite things about you. It's something I think about a lot. Is that you told me about a vision that you have to do Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Which Glastonbury, you know, for us kids in the U.S. is like this icon. It's like your Coachella.
Yeah.
And so we've watched Glastonbury, you know, like so many amazing artists have done it. And I can actually visualize when you describe the vision that you have. I think it's a heavenly vision, by the way. The vision that you have to do Glastonbury it's not like you, some people share their vision and they, and you go like, oh, that's pretty self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty cool you vision. But I feel like that vision that you have is like pretty like us, like it's bigger than you.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it's quite a simple thing, really. Delirious did play Glastonbury like years ago on the main stage.
Jeez.
And it was just before Lenny Kravitz. So can you believe that? Like it was, and then we saw Lenny and he was just like, oh, I think we got some work to do.
Yeah, right.
It was unbelievable. So that's always been in me. But my favorite passage in the Bible is Ezekiel 37. I don't know why. I just love that story of the dry bones coming to life. So yeah, the vision, that sort of dream that you're a little bit embarrassed to tell someone about, is I just see myself in front of that crowd with just reading that story out and then sort of things happening in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, broken hearts being made great again, and, you know, depression lifting off people and sort of calling it out. So, but the amazing thing is, and this is where the creative thing is always a mystery to me, is that I've now got a song on this new record which has that scripture in the song. It's called Everybody Is Broken. And I didn't even realize we were doing it.
Wow.
I didn't even realize, like, oh, yeah, this is it. This is the moment. This is the song that's going to help do that. I just realized it a couple of days ago. But, but yeah, Everybody Is Broken. It's sort of telling the story that we all are. But in the context of, yeah, but look what happens when the breath comes.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the army rises up. And but I'll tell you when I get the call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll
be the first to know.
Please do.
Yeah.
Well, I just think, you know, number one, anybody that is willing to be vulnerable enough to share their dreams with others, that is just such a cool quality. Because I feel like insecurity really keeps you from going like, I have this dream, but like if people heard it, they would laugh or think I'm crazy or like, but I think you gotta have a little bit of that Joseph in you to be a great leader, to go like, you're never gonna believe this. I just had this dream. You guys were worshiping me.
Yeah.
And his dad's like, what? Like, you can't just say that. That is a dreamer. A dreamer to me has the conviction of going like, this thing is really big and I got to share it. And I was challenged when you shared that dream, because I go, do I have dreams in my heart that I can share that if people heard it, they would go, whoa, like that's massive.
I mean, Brian Houston says that we should all have a dream in our heart that's so big that we're embarrassed to tell someone.
Right.
Like you just said.
Yeah.
And that's always stuck with me. Yeah, it's like, oh no, I need to have something that, oh, I'm just a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, if I said that to someone, they're going to think I'm a bit strange.
Yeah, you're crazy.
But you know, that is at the heart of faith, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that dreaming quality of, well, why can't we see a city changed?
Right.
Why can't we see crime rate come down? Or,
right.
You know, all the things, the crazy dreams that everyone says no, it can never happen.
Yeah.
Because cities are full of bad people. But, you know, God loves cities, doesn't he?
He does.
And so he has a heart for them. And so that's where the church is great. And that's where creativity is great. Because it creates a great sound in a city that smells great.
Yep.
And that draws people.
I love it. I know, right?
Yeah.
Every time I hit the table, like, so I'm sorry. I want to apologize to everybody every time.
I'm telling you right now.
That is so your personality. Wait, what? Hey, thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, it's such a delight to talk to you. And we're going to keep doing this for many, many years to come. I just don't know if there will always be cameras. But thank you for the life that you live and who you are as a father and husband, as a person. You're the top of the top in my book. Love you a lot.
Likewise. Thank you.
We'll see you guys next time.
Do you ever feel like you want to know more about the Bible, but that it's kind of hard to understand? Do you want to share your faith with your friends, but have a hard time figuring out how to do that? Do you want to learn how to connect the Bible to your real life? Well, then this is the show for you. My name is Rachel, and I'm your host. I've been a children's pastor for a long time, and one of my favorite things is helping kids learn how to understand the Bible. I think that sometimes people think that the Bible is just for adults, but God actually really wants kids to know about Him. So on this podcast, we're going to learn all about God's big story and how He shows Himself to us through the Bible. As we learn together what the stories in the Bible mean, we can learn how to live out our faith in our everyday life. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode.
My name's Preston Sprinkle, and I host the Theology in the Raw podcast. Theology in Raw aims to help believers to think Christianly about theological and cultural issues by engaging in curious conversations with a diverse range of thoughtful people. I have conversations with a wide range of different guests who come from different perspectives, and no topic is off limits. Sexuality, abortion, politics, LGBTQ, warfare, violence, marijuana, immigration, you name it. If you have a theological or cultural issue that you have been wrestling with over 1,100 episodes, we've probably talked about it on Theology in the Raw. Along with conversations with various people, I also address questions sent in from my audience every month. And occasionally, I will talk about some of my latest research projects that I'm currently working on. Theology in the Raw is not for everyone. It is uncut, uncensored, and I don't give trigger warnings. So check out Theology in the Raw through your favorite podcast app.